Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
My next guest, Ben Bulch, Los Angeles Times, covers UCLA, had a terrific piece on the new athletic director at UCLA that he has posted. I encourage you to check that out. He's joining us now. How much of an opportunity do they have at UCLA to really turn pivot here and maybe do some good things under Martin Jarmond?
Oh, I think it's a great opportunity, and I think he's off to a tremendous start. He's already engaging directly with people on Twitter, which sounds like a simple thing, but it was something that his predecessor, Dan Guerrero, never did. In fact, I don't even think he has a Twitter account. And he's just been very accessible. And even though he's not, you know, on campus yet, I get the sense that he's already got his hands in the middle of things. You know, there was that letter that the football players wrote last week demanding some protections coming back on campus with the coronavirus, and he jumped right in on that and facilitated some meetings and helped allay some concerns. So really a great start already, even before he set foot on campus.
Is it fair to say UCLA's been a sleeping giant, or is that too critical of them?
No, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, when you look at you know, all the resources and the tradition and the potential with this recruiting area, you know, obviously in the Olympic sports they've had tremendous success, but football, I think, you know, this is, you know, it might be the longest Rose Bowl drought in school history here. You know, I haven't been since January 1st, 1999, and then in basketball, no national championships since 95 at the school that holds the record for national championships. So you know that the potential is there, but it's really gone unrealized over the last quarter century.
Ben Bulch with us, Los Angeles Times, covers UCLA. Cliff Notes version of Jarmond, you know, I know he comes to UCLA from Boston College, but where are the points of emphasis right out of the gates for him with the Bruins?
Well, I think it's two big things. I think it's the budget situation, and they really go hand in hand. It's the budget situation, and then it's fixing the football program that drives the money for UCLA. So, you know, you fix football, then you fix the budget situation. So that's got to be the big emphasis. You know, he hired Jeff Hafley at Boston College, who had worked with Chip Kelly, so he's got some inside intel there. But as we all know, 7-17 in Chip's first 2 years, they've really got to get some win some ball games here and get some buzz and get some people in the seats, because right now, you know, that may be a little bit out of their control this season. But, you know, get some excitement about this football program, and that will solve a lot of problems.
Amid a challenging time, I'm always looking at creative people, right? We always see you know, businesses and opportunities and industries, you know, fortunes will be made coming out of this pandemic. I always look at Chip Kelly and think there's a guy who's outside the box. Is he doing anything that you've noticed that is different or more creative than maybe some other things you're seeing around the country?
Well, he's spending a lot of money on food for his players. That was one of the things that came out of the budget problems that UCLA's had, is that they're spending $5.4 million to feed the football team on an annual basis, where that number used to be, you know, south of $800,000. So,
wow.
You know, I asked what goes into that, and, you know, it's things like organic grass-fed beef, and, you know, there were some some costs associated with moving into a new, more expensive football facility where they have to basically cater every meal because they don't have a kitchen in there, which sounds a little bit ridiculous, but it's true. They have to pay kind of a delivery fee every time they have meals in there. But, you know, you talk about Chip Kelly and sleep science and hydration and some of those things, but, you know, I think the food was the one that really jumped out to me.
They were really young on the football field, and I think, you know, maybe a part of their struggles was with that. Do you expect this is a program that can take a big step forward in the next season?
Yeah, you know, the thing that I look at with this 2020 season in UCLA is the schedule. I mean, it sets up really nicely for them with no major conference, non-conference games. They've got Hawaii, New Mexico State, San Diego State, and then, you know, on the north side, they've got Washington State and Oregon State instead of Washington and Oregon. So, you know, that sets up nicely for them. And as you alluded to, you know, they've got young players, and young players sometimes take an unforeseen leap. So I think that they're going to need to have that happen at quite a few positions because they've got quite a bit of turnover. But, you know, if all that happens, this could be kind of the season where things start to click a little bit under Chip Kelly and they start to kind of take that next step.
Ben Bolch, Los Angeles Times, is our guest. You should be following him on Twitter. You should be reading him at thelatimes.com. Ben, what are your thoughts, and what's sort of the prevailing opinion in Southern California when it comes to football season?
As to whether we'll have it?
Yeah, pandemic, whether we'll have it, and what will it look like?
Yeah, you know, as people have been reporting over the last few days, I do kind of get a sense that, you know, there's more pessimism than there was, you know, a couple of weeks ago as the number of cases rise. We're certainly in a hotbed of coronavirus cases here in L.A. County. And I think that it's pretty fair to say at this point that there is football. Most likely it will be without fans, at least to start the season and kind of see how that looks and if they can even you know, get games played with full rosters or close to full rosters. That will be a victory in itself. And I think worrying about having fans is just kind of like the icing on the cake.
Yeah, and I keep thinking, too, that, you know, they need the money so badly. What happens, and did you get a sense from talking with Martin Jarmond about UCLA, what happens if there's not a football season? What happens to the rest of the athletic department?
Yeah, that's kind of like the doomsday scenario, right? And you know, I don't know what the contingencies are, but I think we've all seen that they're trying to avoid that at all costs. And I think that's one of the main reasons we're seeing them bring these athletes back on campus and putting these safety protocols in place and doing everything humanly possible to try to have a season in some form, because if there is no football, there's no money. And there's not enough, you know, reserves to kind of withstand that. So that's why this is such a big issue, and why everybody's putting so much effort into it, because they basically have to have it. And I can't answer the question of what happens if there's no football season and you take that pile of money off the table, because that's going to be devastating for every athletic department.
Yeah, I think about Oregon State in particular, because I think Oregon is probably built more to withstand with some of its gift-giving and Phil Knight, of course, in their corner. But at Oregon State, I think it would cause massive budget cuts. I think it would cause layoffs. I think they'd have to look seriously at sports. Would they have to drop a sport or two to make it work? And I don't think that's an equation anybody wants to have. Ben Bolch is with us of the L.A. Times. I also am hopeful that they can play games, and I'm kind of looking around the country saying, okay, you know, are we going to get to see college football or not? When you look at UCLA's trajectory, you always have to talk about USC. How much rubbernecking do the Bruins do these days looking over at USC to see how they're doing?
Well, it's interesting. I think that USC's recruiting is just, they're having a real bonanza right now with the pandemic. You know, it's really interesting how players are jumping on board a lot earlier in the process than they normally do. And UCLA's gotten a little bit of that. In fact, they just picked up a four-star lineman commitment yesterday, but USC is really raking in the recruiting success right now, and I think that's something that UCLA obviously needs under Chip Kelly. I mean, they're going to need four and five star guys to really turn it around. So that there's definitely some envy there, and looking over across town and seeing what's happening, and so that's kind of what I see right now.
We're talking to Ben Bulch of the Los Angeles Times. All right, basketball or football? I mean, the perception out there is that UCLA is a basketball school until something happens in football. Do you feel like that is a fair assessment, or is that up in the air, or given that UCLA, you know, hasn't been at the top of the conference in basketball, is that a question mark?
Yeah, you know, I always hear that as well, but it's interesting. I kind of judge that based on how much response and feedback I get to things I'm writing and saying. And I always get 2 to 3 times as many emails about football as I do about basketball. So to me, that kind of speaks to the passion and the interest in football, even given, you know, UCLA's historic success in basketball. So I think it is interesting. I think that you know, you talk about sleeping giant. I think that the people are just waiting for this football program to really become something special. I mean, I think people thought they were on the brink there early in the Jim Mora years, but never quite got over to that hump to win a Pac-12 and go to the Rose Bowl. But I think that, you know, they really obviously want to be both, but I think it's a lot more balanced than people think. When they think UCLA, they think about, you know, all the titles with Wooden and being a basketball school, but I think that they really is a lot of balance there.
All right, Ben Bulch, Los Angeles Times. Great job on the piece. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, man.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, there he is. Read him in the LA Times. Follow him on Twitter. Catch him on this show occasionally. Love having Ben on the program. Leave it here. The Culligan Water Cooler Report is coming up. You can join Team Canzano by texting BFT to 484848. If you text BFT to that phone number, you will be eligible to get tickets when the games return, win some giveaways. It's not always tickets. Sometimes it's just giveaways. But you also get the weekly newsletter delivered to your email inbox. I do that every Thursday. It's a weekly newsletter. I'm doing a new installment on Oregon Live. It is a Monday mailbag. I'll talk about that. I've been getting a lot more emails since. It's interesting. As I begin to publish letters, I start to get more email. That brings us, of course, to our Culligan Water Cooler Report.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
Okay, rapid fire. We're around the water cooler. Would you feel safe staying in a hotel right now? Alabama Adriana, hotel right now.
Yes.
Judah Newby, hotel right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, to be clear, not a motel. A hotel, yes.
Just a hotel. How about an Airbnb?
That's a no for me.
Oh.
Why? Why is that a no?
It's actually less sanitary and more customer service related.
Oh, you think? Well, you have a problem with them?
I've heard so many horror stories about people going in some type of, you know, issue with them. And I've stayed at multiple Airbnbs. Sometimes it's a good experience. Sometimes not so good experience. Sometimes the owners have a dog that walks around on hardwood upstairs and you can't fall asleep. I'd rather do the hotel route.
Alabama Adriana, Airbnb?
I'll go ahead and say yeah, because I was already looking for some at the coast like a couple weeks ago, but yep. I don't think it's going to happen, but I was looking at them, so I would say yeah.
Why isn't it going to happen? You just plans changed, or you're uneasy about it?
A little bit of both. A little bit of both. I think I'm jumping the gun a bit to be doing it in June.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I feel safe in both, and I thought it is an interesting thing. I saw a survey today where it was about 50-50 on the hotel, and it was about 38% yes on the Airbnb. And I wondered why people trusted Airbnb less than they trust a hotel. Because I would think, like, you know, for me, the bigger thing is, how long can the virus live on surfaces? How well are they disinfecting between individuals who stay there? And further, for me, the bigger issue is just being around people who potentially are infected and in a closed, not ventilated space. But I don't know, maybe that's just me. Like, I had this idea that, you know, the cleaning staff on both the Airbnbs and the hotels would be about the same. But why do you think people trust the hotels more than the Airbnb?
Well, you just said the cleaning staff at the Airbnb. You mean the actual owners of their own place?
Well, unless they pay somebody. Some people do pay, like, hey, they have a person who's a cleaning person who comes in between each, you know, the two people who stay there. But some other owners just do it themselves, probably save the money. But
I could see why people think that it's cleaner slash safer if you're staying at an Airbnb in a rural area, in an out-of-the-way area, as opposed to, like, a city center hotel. That I can understand, but there's been a lot of, I mean, you've heard the horror stories of people that put in deposits and then their trip gets canceled or whatever, and yep, they don't get their deposit back. Like, I don't know. To me, it's more the financial risk than it is the health risk. I would agree with you that the health risks are probably comparable at the two locations.
We used VRBO for a vacation thing that we do every summer. And Anna and I have told the story on the show before, but, you know, we usually go and try to pick 1 week where we save up and we say, okay, we're going to do something as a family. And we had it planned. We had it on the books. And then all this stuff, of course, happened. And she spent like an hour on the phone trying to get the refund. And they did not make it easy to get the refund. And she eventually got the refund, but it was only after being on the phone, having the individual, like, who was trying, processing the refund, try to convince her to take a credit of 110% instead of the refund, and then ultimately giving the refund. But it was an investment. Like, she could not get through on the phone. And I think some of these companies, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and just say, hey, it's demand related. Like, a lot of people might be canceling. I think some of them play that insurance game. You know, the insurance companies, that game they play where they'll give you the reimbursement, but they make you really work for it because they know that a portion of the people out there will be deterred by the effort that it takes to get the refund. I mean, literally, it's the whole, you know, it's the whole philosophy between making a purchase. It's just like when you go to the grocery store, you know, and they put the magazines and the candy and the stuff up by the checkout area. They're not doing that because that's the only area they can fit it in. They're doing it because they know that people are more inclined to make an impulse purchase on something like that they see at the register. They're not putting eggs up there because that's not an impulse buy. And it's the same philosophy that I think some of these companies use to try to deter people from seeking the reimbursement. The airlines do it. I mean, they make it difficult on you. I had to cancel flights that I had work-wise to go to the Women's Final Four, Oregon Ducks women's basketball team. I had to cancel some airline flights, and the airline made it impossible for me to get a refund, even though it was like a pandemic has gone on. Don't know if you're going to. So I have these flight credits, and I'm hopeful by April of next year, I'll be able to use the flight credits. Otherwise, you know, I'm going to have to call back and be like, hey, remember those credits you gave me? Still not safe to fly. Can I get a refund, or can I extend the credit? I don't know what they're going to do in a case like that. And then further, we are 24-hour fitness gym members. Okay. We haven't been in a while, because nobody's going to the gym. But I kind of feel misled by them in that they collected dues for several months and then, as things began to reopen, declared bankruptcy. Like, you know, they knew what they were doing. It wasn't a surprise. Like, the bookkeeper didn't turn to the front desk person at 24-Hour Fitness and say, you know what, we're not going to be able to open this week. Yeah, they knew that was coming. And they still, you know, collected the dues and were difficult to get a hold of. They played the game. And, you know, I feel a little misled by that. So I think from a hotel standpoint, people in general, maybe, Judah, this is it. Maybe people just trust a hotel because they know they have a brand to protect more than an Airbnb where, you've got somebody who potentially could just go, no, I'm not giving a refund.
That being said, if you're going to the coast right now, from just a, like, you know, space standpoint, wouldn't you rather go to a place that's all yours rather than any chance of interacting with other people in a lobby or in a hallway or in an elevator, that type of thing?
Yeah.
I guess I get both sides.
All right. This has been the Culligan Water Cooler Report. It's brought to you by Culligan of Oregon. I want to thank them for their strong support of the Bald Faced Truth radio show and for them helping a lot of people in the state of Oregon who are interested in getting water treatment solutions and water that tastes better. My sister is currently looking at that. She's getting a system installed at her house that will give her water that tastes better and is filtered, and she's thrilled about that. So you can do that as well at CulliganOfOregon.com, where they have all sorts of plans, then a plan that'll fit your household. All right, coming up in the 2 o'clock hour, we've got this. This is how it's going to happen. The 2 at 2 is coming up at the top of the hour, followed by Punch It Audio. It's going to move fast. Then my wife's going to join us, and I don't know what's going to happen after that. So for those of you out there that like this show because it's very conversational and free-flowing, this next hour is made for you. It is the happy hour. Again, if you want to join Team Canzano, this is how you do it. You can do it a number of ways. Make sure you're following me on Twitter, at JohnCanzanoBFT. And a bunch of people unfollow me because I was tweeting about things that matter to me, and I don't care if they...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Faced Truth.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.